Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Code Soup. I'm for July 29th, 2012. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me each and every week, welcome, Catherine Smith.
Well, hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
And from Somerville, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yeah, good to see you again. I was up with Tim last night at the Chattooga JJ dinner. I was his, one of his special guests at his table, and enjoyed Tim. Let me cover that and hear Jason Carter, State Senator, Bobby Lee Cook, and others speak. Tim,
I'm sorry I missed it.
Oh, yeah. Jason was his usual wonderful. Catherine, very informative. Good evening. We got a 1-2 punch of Bobby Lee Cook and Jason Carter. Couldn't beat that anywhere in Georgia last night, right, David?
You're right. Well, and Jason, of course, said he'd come back on the show and some other people that are around that may be interested, including congressional candidates and what have you. Well, let's move on to national politics. And the Olympics kicked off on Friday. And right off the bat, Mitt Romney picked this time to do his international tour to show that he was ready to handle foreign policy affairs. And he just stuck his foot in his mouth one time after another. A lot of it surrounding the Olympics, which, Tim, you were talking about was a strength. Tim, how much were you shocked by this?
Okay, David, I am really having trouble hearing you. There is a lot of echoing going on here. Could you repeat that, please?
Well, and Tim, I'm going to repeat it, and I bet the echoing's gone away. I think it's the Skype that happens at times.
Okay.
Yes, the Olympics. You know, this is a chance for Mitt Romney to shine, going overseas with the Olympics, and instead he's taking a strength and making it a weakness.
Yeah. It was just supposed to be a few photo ops and talking to a few reporters. But then he had this interview with Brian Williams, and he was asked, his view of the British, preparedness, security-wise and all of that. And then here he comes saying, well, there were some things that were disconcerting, the stories about the security and a strike maybe happening. And he said that just all was not, something that was encouraging. And it didn't go over real well with the British. the mayor of London was actually ridiculing him in a speech he made, and so he screwed up the first leg of this big trip of his, and it was one of his strengths, what he did with the Olympics, and he just blew that opportunity. So now on to Israel, and let's see what he can do there.
Yeah, it's and then of course to contrast that, the First Lady's over there, and today she attended, or I guess it's maybe been last night. Of course, the time delay, it's hard to say. You see these things, but they didn't happen in real time, so it gets confusing. Anyway, the First Lady watched the basketball game where the Americans beat France, and every single member of the team, including the coaches, came over and greeted her and hugged her. Said it seemed almost like an endorsement without being an endorsement almost. Definitely put, her in a positive light. Catherine, first off, what do you make of what Mitt Romney did, and what do you think about the Olympics becoming a real weakness now for Mitt Romney after this.
I was pretty flabbergasted by his like repeated gaffes. It really started before he got there with his comment about Anglo-Saxons. And
that was not a comment.
Right. And not really recognizing, I mean, you know, all the things that he said, they were, you know, they are legitimate concerns. There was some concerns about the security, you know, but it's the Olympics. It's, you know, he, of all the people that should understand how important it is for the host city to feel confident and strong and complimented from any, you know, potential world leader that happens to be there, he should understand that. And it's the Olympics. The Olympics are, you know, for lack of any other, you know, they're like the one opportunity that we have to come together as a world and, you know, sort of share this, you know, amazing experience. And he, like, just put a real damper on it, and I thought it was really undiplomatic. I mean, and then he made that remark about MI6, which you never, I mean, you're not even ever supposed to talk about MI6 ever. You know, it's supposed to never be, you know, the words are never supposed to come out of your mouth, but he said, oh, yeah, I enjoyed meeting with MI6. You know, really? You're not supposed to do that. But on the other hand, I thought the opening ceremonies were absolutely remarkable and so interesting and such a celebration of the unity of that the Olympics can provide. I was really impressed with just the whole tone of it, and you know, and I thought that the fact that they celebrated their health care was really amazing. And I was on Twitter all night, and there were a lot of people saying, look at that, they're celebrating their health care. But I thought it was really moving, and I loved the way they lit the final part of the torch. I thought the whole thing was very thoughtful and, you know, welcoming, and I was really surprised. And I'm not a big Olympics person. I'm not watching it now. Like, I don't watch it. But so that's what I had to say about it. But, yeah, Mitt Romney just, he made a fool of himself.
Yeah, and this is the big foreign policy tour. And this is kind of a relatively new thing, it seems like. I remember when the President Obama went in 2008 as Senator Obama, some people kind of questioned, you know, why he was doing that. Tim, what are you kind of know more of our historical stuff here. How many presidential nominees have done this European tour in the past prior to this time in President Obama in 2008?
Actually, several of them have done this, especially those that, need to increase their foreign policy chops, I guess, is a good way to do it. I mean, let's face it, Mitt Romney has been a one-term governor of, you know, Massachusetts, and that represents all that he has done as an elected official. He has never served in a federal office like the president did before he became president. So quite often American politicians will undertake trips like this, but most of the time they follow two simple rules. Number one, once they leave American soil, they do not say anything negative about the President of the United States or about, you know, anything going on here. And secondly, they don't do, or they try so hard not to do anything dumb. You know, when Mitt Romney made these gaffes, suddenly he became the story, and the story was not a good thing, and it represented a lost opportunity for him. He may do better in Israel and Poland. Other people like, candidate Obama appearing in front of 250,000 Berliners, that lasting image of that sea of people cheering, that particular trip very well could only be described as triumphant. So, you know, better luck to Governor Romney on the next leg of his trip.
Yeah, he just can't seem to get any traction. You know, sometimes the polls will kind of move in his favor, but it's not like he did this, you know, massive thing to make it happen. It's almost like, hey, just a different crowd of folks are on vacation, and that changed who they sampled. I mean, there's nothing you can point to. And now this week, if he loses ground, you would say, hey, well, this is, you know, a direct correlation. But then, of course, if he holds steady or gains ground once again, it'll be, hey, you know, who was on vacation late in the summer at this point. I guess, Tim, I'd said we'd come to the outrage, but it kind of makes sense to talk about Israel and the Jewish vote in America next and then come to the outrage. Would that be okay with you?
Yes, sir, it does.
Yeah, well, because you had kind of alluded to the trip to Israel, and of course there's going to be fundraisers there, which I'm not sure how fundraisers work in a foreign country. Catherine, were you kind of surprised to hear about fundraisers overseas?
I was surprised to hear that. Then today on the news I heard that it's going to be predominantly Americans living in Israel.
Yeah, it has to be American citizens, right? It can't be foreign.
Right.
You can't take the
right.
donation. Foreign citizens,
right.
So yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That just kind of surprised me. Well, I guess this kind of gets into a new line of, I won't say attack, but a way to maybe help him out with, you know, Jewish voters in America, and that might move, in particular, I think Florida might be the target with voters here. And there's a commercial that came out by Jewish Republicans. I don't remember the name of the exact organization, but it was, you know, Jewish Republicans. And it was a minute and a half ad featuring this guy that had held fundraisers for President Obama, voted for him, lifelong Democrat, never voted for Republican. It talks about how he's going to vote for Mitt Romney this time. Now, I will tell you, I remember in 2004 being at the Democratic Convention, and they played probably three of these videos a night about people who voted for George W. Bush in 2000 and were voting for John Kerry in 2004. And I thought they were pretty compelling. So I guess to be fair, when it goes the other way, I still find this compelling. Now, this may just be my bias towards anecdotal evidence. Now, as far as the actual ad goes, a minute and a half, that tells me that it's mainly going to be for the Internet and certain targeted shows. There's no way to buy that over and over. And then another point off of that, the actual ad, some of the points were kind of hard to figure. Like, they would show where President Obama insulted Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and all it would do is show pictures, and there was no way to really see how he insulted him so. And then, of course, it talked about the economy. It took a still shot of a town that looked closed down, and that could have been a shot from, you know, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, who knows? Catherine, what did you make of that?
Well, I think, you know, like you said, those I was a Democrat and now I'm a Republican, or I was a Republican and now I'm a Democrat, I think they speak to a certain demographic. I think they probably appeal somewhat to independents and disgruntled Democrats, but I don't have any fear for President Obama's support in the Jewish community. It might be tight, but I still think he's going to prevail in that demographic. I think some of the implications in that ad, when you know, drill down deeper, they weren't really very accurate. I mean, who was rude first, you know, Netanyahu or President Obama? They're world leaders, and they don't agree on everything. And, you know, it can't always be, you know, big pats on the backs and, you know, hearty handshakes and, oh, yeah, we agree on everything. It just can't be that way. And, you know, as soon as we can understand that, the better we'll be.
Yes. Tim, what did you make of this ad?
Florida. I mean, look, most of the Jewish voters in this country, and in the last election, that represented 2% of the vote, a little less than 3 million voters. Most of the Jewish voters in this country live in two states, New York State, which has more Jews than the state of Israel does, and the state of Florida. Well, I'm pretty certain the Romney campaign is not making a big play for the state of New York. Therefore, we're talking about a state where just a little handful of votes could swing the election. That has something like we saw in 2000. Romney's campaign knows they're not going to win the Jewish vote. There's a couple of new polls out. One, I believe, was Gallup that showed the president up by 43 points, and then another poll by the public religion research firm that showed him with a 32-point lead. The biggest amount of Jewish vote in modern history for a president Republican was in 2004. When Bush got 25% of the Jewish vote, Romney would take between 30% and 35% of it and run like a thief right now, because that might represent a few thousand votes in Florida. So in that regard, I'm going to kind of play devil's advocate and say that this ad was probably effective for its target audience. What do you think, David?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I guess if you agree with the ad, like you're a Republican, you're like, oh, yeah, this makes you feel good. This is evidence of what I think. And then, of course, if you're a Democrat like us, I think it may say you may get kind of worried. You go, oh, well, there's more people like this guy. If this guy changed his mind, how, you know, I'm sure others do. And you don't realize that it could be just such a small sample size. So I think if you'd have had this ad without the poll, that are the two polls that came out, you might be worried. Then you see the two polls and it shows, well, it's really not that close either. You know, Jewish voters are staying Democratic like they pretty much always have been.
Yeah.
And so the trick will be, or the, I guess the question to me is, why are is Mitt Romney's campaign trying this tactic, or at least friends in this case,
well,
with Jewish Republicans? Why is he trying this?
Three reasons. Number one, in the Republican Party, the evangelicals, if you want to pass muster with them, you better be on board with Israel 100%. That explains Romney's trip to Israel, and it does some to explain this. Number two, as I've already said, they need to move the needle a little bit in a state like Florida. Anything they can do to it. And the Jewish vote is something they might can move the needle a little bit on. They're certainly not going to move the needle on the African-American vote. And number three, it just shows the difference in this year and 4 years ago. John McCain had so many problems, there was no way he could worry about courting the Jewish vote. But in such a close election, and with the fact that the Republicans are going to have as much or more money to spend as the Obama campaign, they can take a shot at something like this. So I think that's the three reasons we're seeing it happen.
Okay, last word on this campaign?
I agree with what Tim's saying, essentially.
Yeah, and I think we all think the same thing. This is a lot about Florida. Florida is one of the top, say, three swing states in the country. Then it makes sense that Romney has to try something to try to peel away some support and change that state. Well, Tim, sounds like a good time, Zinni, to start the outrage of the week.
Oh, yes. Being we're talking about the presidential election already, this is going to be a close election. If it's held today, it's just razor thin, and I think everybody out there that follows politics at all, most people that are paying any attention believe that. The polls show that. The candidates are reacting down to the local level in some places. If that will be the case in all kind of races all over the country, Still, there are many that believe that the president will prevail because of a built-in electoral advantage. Now, the surprise for you is that I am not necessarily among those who believe that. And that's because an old devil that many of us thought was buried and gone long ago has once again re-entered the national scene. The Republicans who are bringing this devil back calls it this time around voter ID laws. I call it voter suppression. In at least 11 states, these new voter ID laws have been hammered through by Republican governors and legislatures, many of whom were elected in the Tea Party Revolution of 2010 when the GOP won outright control of 20 states. And it's not just 11 random states either. Many of these states are battlegrounds for the presidential election, three in particular. Iowa, Pennsylvania, and Florida are all within the margin of error in the polls right now. There are total toss-up states. Up in Pennsylvania, after the law passed, Mike Terzai, who is the House Majority Leader up there, got on Twitter and said that the new law will pretty much give Mitt Romney the state. And that could be likely, in my book at least, because studies show that over 800,000 registered voters in Pennsylvania do not have a photo ID of any kind and could be affected if they don't get one. This is shown to be the case, even though Republicans up there originally said the number was only like 89,000 people. One of these people is a 93-year-old woman who first voted in 1940. But she may not be able to vote this year. She's having trouble getting a copy of her birth certificate from the authorities there. And there's going to be a lot of people like that, even in states where the law, you know, provides some form of photo ID to use. Well, there are problems that are cropping up. Down in Florida, our little right-wing governor down there, Rick Scott, and his cohorts have taken this stuff several steps further. For instance, under the old election law, if you were a nonviolent convicted felon, you could regain the right to vote after your debt to society was paid in full. But now Governor Scott has seen to it that these felons have to endure a five-year waiting period. Then, when that period ends, they have to reapply to the state by filling out numerous and difficult-to-comprehend forms. And it's not just felons that the governor is targeting. New voters down there in the crosshairs as well. The state has made it harder for groups and individuals to register new voters. They all have to register with the state now. The procedure is onerous. There are backups and other delays, and we're talking about these radical groups, you know, like the League of Women Voters, for instance. And as a result, voter registration, according to National Public Radio, is now running far behind the levels of 2008 in Florida. And to top everything else off, the governor had ordered election officials in the counties down there to, shall we say, purge the voter rolls of certain groups of voters who turned out to be mostly Hispanic and, as luck would have it, mostly in Democratic areas. Many election officials down there in those counties have refused to comply, so the state is suing the federal government to obtain a database of what they refer to as illegals, who they could then remove from the voter rolls themselves, which would mean, in essence, that a repeat of the 2000 voter rolls purge would occur in Florida when most of those purges turned out to be, you guessed it, legal. No doubt that move alone probably cost Al Gore the presidency. He only lost the state by 537 votes. Well, the Republicans in these states, for their part, dutifully report that they are only interested in halting the scourge of massive voter fraud. Well, that's interesting, and that would be a fine reason for enacting these restrictive laws if it was true, which, by the way, it is not. The New York University's Brennan School of Law conducted a thorough study on voter fraud nationwide, and their study found that voter fraud is extremely rare. Now, the main reason for that is that if you are caught committing such fraud, you could get upwards of 5 years in jail and a $10,000 fine, and that's just for committing fraud for one vote. So, in other words, the risk is not worth the reward. So, this study found, for instance, that in the state of Wisconsin, in the presidential election of 2004, yet 3 million voters, a grand total of 7 votes were fraudulent. In Ohio, same year, the results showed that one voter out of every 400,000 voters attempted to commit some sort of fraud. Fraud exists, yes. There's a little bit of it going on, a few here, a few there, generally 10 votes or less, like the woman in Mississippi that voted under 10 different names. But the present system purges these rare instances. These people get caught by the authorities. There is no widespread fraud. To say that it is means that either the person saying it has no comprehension of the facts as they exist, or they're simply lying. The facts do show it is simply not the case. The facts do show, though, that more people are killed by lightning strikes than there are instances of voter fraud in the United States. You know what else this study showed? Well, it showed the real reason that these laws are being enacted to start with. Up to 10% of eligible voters in any state could be disenfranchised by these moves. They could be out of the process. As a result, you know, that could swing any election. Now, who would benefit? Well, the facts also show that these laws would mainly affect Black, Hispanic, lower income, and young voters, who are all the least likely to have these required identifications. Now, who do you suppose the majority of the people in these groups vote for? Well, if you said the Democrats, there's your answer. That's why 94% of Republican voters in this country favor these voter ID laws. At present, the Justice Department has halted the enactment of the voter ID law down in Texas by concluding that it amounts to nothing but a poll tax. Up in Pennsylvania, where I talked about a while ago, several groups are joining in a lawsuit to stop that law. In Wisconsin, just the other day, a judge ruled the voter ID law there to be unconstitutional. The same thing just happened in South Carolina. So there is some blowback occurring. People are not taking this sitting down. And I wish all of these brave people who are stepping forward to challenge these laws great success in stopping what is surely madness. Voting is such a precious thing. There are better ways to check a voter's eligibility than these laws. These laws may prevent hundreds of thousands of honest voters in multiple states from casting their ballots just because, the way I see it, one side wants to win and wants to stop these people from voting in order to do that. Now, that isn't right. When I was a kid, I saw African Americans down here stop in their tracks from voting by people that were using the law to do that. When my mother was a kid, she saw the same thing happened to women. I honestly thought that with the passage of the Voting Rights Act in 1965, coupled with earlier amendments to the Constitution, which gave many the right to vote, that we were past voter suppression of large segments of our population in this country. And yet, here we are. They invent a problem. They enact their solution. and they win. I just hope that people realize this. I hope they understand what is really happening here. If the proponents of these laws prevail, we won't have free and fair elections, at least the way I see it. We'll have essentially a coup d'etat. And the words from the classic novel 1984 would ring true. Some animals are more equal than others, David.
Good analogy. Well, it sounds like at best the Republicans are fixing a problem that doesn't exist. At worst, I mean, they're
right.
trying to bring back, you know, Jim Crow.
Right.
Just to, you know, win the game, if you will, which is such a short-sighted strategy because eventually, like we were hearing last night from State Senator Jason Carter, the math will just catch up with them. Even with these rules in place, they won't be able to win. Now, one thing I do wonder about is I know one group that also gets hurt by voter ID laws is the elderly who have kind of phased out of driving. And, of course, there's probably going to be a lot of older white voters, voters that really don't like the president that much. It could be that, you know, in some places they lose some of these older white voters that were going to vote overwhelmingly for Republicans. So there could be a little bite back on their own, you know, their own interest. Although, and when, once again, that's very sad. We're talking about in a lot of cases people that might have fought World War II or gone to factories when other people went off to World War II, you know, the greatest generation, maybe on the Korean War. And these people are going to not be able to vote, which is just inconceivable, irregardless if they want to vote the way I want to vote.
Check this out. I want to make one comment. Check this out, Debbie. Regarding what you just said, they interviewed a guy down in Florida who was one of those convicted felons I was telling you about, and he shrugged his shoulders and said, "You know, I don't understand this." He said, I was going to vote for Romney.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things that I often think about in when we talk about this voter suppression or and voter fraud is that, to me, what it really is saying is that our secretaries of state and our election offices cannot be trusted. Because if you have trustworthy secretaries of state who have policies in place to make sure that the registrations are properly completed, then you shouldn't have this problem, right? I mean, the actual voting is the sort of the voter registration is where the all this documentation and proof of who you are, that's where that should take place. And once that's done, then you should be able to vote freely because you've already proven. And so it seems to me that it says something about their confidence in these secretaries of state. And in most of these states, they have Republican secretaries of state.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key factor. If the Republicans didn't have the 2010 they did, they would have had trouble enacting laws in many of these states.
Well, they wouldn't be doing it.
That's right.
That election was pivotal in giving them a chance to do this. Well, speaking of elections and the right to vote, unfortunately, I would say for me and my ballot, this is the most uneventful primary election I'm going to see. There's actually two special elections that on the Democratic ballot, there'll be Republican candidates running for open county commission seats and the T-Splosh. But there'll be nothing else for me to vote on. No Democrat versus Democrat races for me to vote on, which is kind of a big shame because I don't feel as involved in the process. Luckily for Tim and Catherine, they don't have that. Catherine, you were telling us about some interesting primaries around the state. Just give us a few highlights.
Well, there's a lot of excitement, or that's a nice way to put it, in the Atlanta area, because there's several primaries among Democrats. Several of them are in these realigned districts where they, you know, lopped someone off of in one, from one district, and they're now running against one of their fellow legislators in the same, who's been, you know, put into the same district. So that, you know, always adds to the, you know, well, I'm better than they are, and they're better, you know, they're a criminal, or, you know, they didn't pay their taxes, or they don't live where they're supposed to live, or, you know, whatever. One interesting one, Linda Pritchett, who is running, I think it's District 63. It's a new district in Southwest Fulton. Actually challenged the residency of her, one of her opponents. There's three people running in that race. And that challenge was not, she did not prevail in that challenge, so that candidate is still running. But in the course of all this, it was discovered that Linda Pritchett has had a couple of scrapes with the law herself. So that was all over the news last week. And, you know, there's just a lot of tension moving into Tuesday's election, and then a lot of energy and money and you know, conversations and arguments about the T-Sloth vote, which isn't looking very good right now. But some people think it's gonna prevail. So that's what's been going on in Metro Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, that's where a lot of action is. Some of these districts that are open, and some of these incumbent versus incumbent seats. Of course, we've got Rashad Taylor and Pat Gardner. I know I'm one of those. And so those will be some to see. Of course, on the Republican side, there's some races, like, for instance, the one we spent so much time talking about up in the Gainesville area. So all those are going to be things to watch. And then, of course, statewide, the T-Sploth, which the news on that thing just seems to get worse and worse, doesn't it, Tim?
Yes, it does. And, you know, we were talking before we went on the air, and Charlie, you know, really laid out a good case for what is happening and what's driving it right now. And I really think up in this area, where you and I live, David, it's just going to get wiped out. It really is. It's going to get destroyed. I have not run into anyone yet up here that has told me they're going to vote for it. And we're the most Democratic county north of Fulton in Georgia. We're an old-school Democratic county, and they're just not going to vote for it up here. It's going down. You may see it do okay in some places in South Georgia. You know, we were talking about the Savannah area, and Catherine and I could go into why that, you know, it's going to do so well over there, what she was explaining to us. But I think the T-Sploth is a goner.
And probably in a county like Chattooga, I don't think traffic jams are a real issue of your day-to-day life, are they?
And we were going to get some money off of it, you know, but people up here are kind of leery of that. They think that money is going to evaporate and end up somewhere else, and they're essentially going to be stuck paying a tax to benefit someone in another area. And right now is not the time to ask people to fund the Sploth, you know, with the economic conditions as they are. So it's
even though I'm sure there's safeguards in place to make sure that a district, you know, has to keep their money, but it just hasn't been explained well. The PR job on this has not been good at all, and I think anybody, whether you favored it or were against it, would say the PR job has been lacking. Catherine, probably the most vital area is in Atlanta, where traffic issues the greatest, and this is a daily problem for some people in Metro Atlanta. What's it looking like there?
Most of the people I know are voting in favor of it. I got into a rather heated conversation last night at a dinner party where one of the people said, well, I don't know anybody who's voting against it. And one of the guests at the party sort of cleared her throat and said, well, I'm not voting for it. And then we got into this giant conversation about it. And one of the arguments in favor of it is that it does provide a lot of jobs. So it is sort of a, you know, it's jobs legislation. And that's, you know, one of the benefits that may not have been highlighted as strongly as it could have. One of the things that's very disappointing to me is that I wish they had not added that 1% onto food. I think that, mm-hmm. you know, we are behind the eight ball on taxing groceries here in Georgia. Many states don't tax groceries at all. Michigan hasn't taxed groceries for decades. And I was shocked when I moved here in 1995 and there were still charging taxes on groceries. Now that it's gone down, you know, over the years, but this 1% is going to be on groceries as well. I think that's it's very regressive, and it really does hurt poor people more than the wealthier people in the middle class. But the other side of it is it's not the best solution. It's not a great bill or a great legislation, but there are a lot of people who feel like it's the only thing we could get considering the legislature that we have, and it's a step in the right direction. And that's kind of the way I'm approaching it now, that it's a step in the right direction. So, and it's going to provide a lot of jobs. So,
well, let me ask a question that Charlie posed, you know, when he was on with us. And I thought of this too. Does this appear or give the appearance that it's the legislature didn't want to make a decision on
yes.
transportation, and they're passing the buck to the voters?
I absolutely think that's what it is.
Hmm. Yeah, you've got a lot of people that probably signed Grover Norquist's pledge and said they would never raise taxes. Well, they could say, hey, the people raised the taxes. You know, they
exactly. Yep.
But I'll tell you, that point about jobs and being a job creator is a really good one that's never been pointed out, and that just shows you how bad the PR job has been done.
Oh,
it was terrible to consume political information, and no one's made that point about, hey, it would create jobs. Now, I'm sure they want to sell it not as a New Deal program, if you will, for the 21st century. But, I mean, that's just kind of a little added benefit, if you will. I guess I would see it as a benefit. I'm sure there's some people that consider paving roads as a job program as an evil thing. But those are the kind of folks that are probably never going to vote for it anyway.
Exactly.
David, the same people have been in charge in Atlanta for 10 years. This
yeah.
is what they come up with?
With 10
this
years?
Problem ongoing. 10 years.
Yeah.
Gee.
Yeah.
I guess the argument they would say is, you know, Nathan Deal would say, hey, I've been in office too, and it's on the ballot.
Oh,
or David Ralston
crap.
Would say, hey, I've been Speaker of the House for, what, three? They would then claim, you know, almost like there's two parties within the Republican
yeah.
Party. We've talked
yeah.
about that before. You know, it's kind of, you know, that's the old Republicans. That was Glenn Richardson.
Oh,
he was too busy chasing, you know, Atlanta Gaslight lobbyists. I mean, they would probably see themselves more nuanced than we would. We just see them as all Republicans. They'd say, oh, well, that's the other Republicans and what have you. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Well, something we hadn't done in a while is rank the southern states as far as how interesting they are. Now, we're going to go through a little quicker. We've got about 17 minutes. And at the same time, we can hit on some stuff we've seen out of North Carolina, Missouri, and Texas, because Texas is primary runoffs on Tuesday as well. So that's how we can cover all that. So we can kind of go bottom to top, and there's a lot of states that are kind of boring, so we don't have to spend a lot of time on them. Catherine, what was your state that you find just going to be the least interesting this year?
Oh, you know, it's kind of a toss-up between Mississippi and Alabama for me.
Yep. I see it kind of the same way. I'll go ahead and, since you said it, I had, and this will cover two with one, I had Alabama dead last and Mississippi slightly before. I think they've got a little more action. They've got a guy named Al Gore running for Senate, so that pops them up over Alabama for me. Not the same Al Gore we know from Inconvenient Truth, but I just want to see how Al Gore does, if you will. So that moved it up from out of the basement. Tim, what you got?
Oh, I got Louisiana dead last. Since Katrina, that state has just been a desert for Democrats, and I don't see anything going on down there this year of great interest. I mean, no politicians are even going to jail right now down there.
Yeah,
it's just
boring. They're still wearing diapers, so that, you know, when they meet with the prostitutes up in D.C., so that gives them a little something.
And the only thing that might be interesting about Louisiana is if they pick Jindal to be the nominee or the vice presidential nominee, then it might be a little bit interesting to watch that state.
That could give them a little juice, too. I've got them a little higher, and I'll tell you why when we get to them. Tim, give us two, since Catherine and I did two.
Oh, well, the one right above Louisiana is one y'all mentioned. That's the state of Alabama for very obvious reasons. What could be more boring than Roy Moore back in politics, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll forget about that since that's a judicial race and he's not running for governor or something like that, but I see where you're going. A few congressionals there, but nothing real. I mean, I think the fella – Holly, we had on the show that's running for Congress. I think he's running as good a campaign with limited resources, but it's not like a lot of those races are real close. Everything should kind of stand pat. Well, I guess we'll move on to the next tier up, and I have Tennessee. Tennessee, if someone would have gone after Bob Corker, a better-funded candidate, I think that race, that state could be more interesting because that race would be more interesting, but it didn't happen. So it kind of gets sunken down for me. Catherine, what do you think?
I was thinking my next two are Tennessee and Arkansas. Tennessee I'm more interested in just because it's our neighbor. Arkansas is not very exciting.
Okay. Catherine's taking the all-state approach about neighbors. Tim, what's your next one? You can give us two, too, and I'll come back.
Yeah, my next two are – and, you know, these are rehashes of Mississippi and Tennessee. I mean, there's just, you know, there's no way right now statewide that anything interesting is going to happen there.
Yeah, you had to throw, I mean, Mississippi we had already thrown in. My next one, I guess, I had mentioned Tennessee. I also have Kentucky, and part of Kentucky is just a calendar. They have all their statewide elections for constitutional offices in odd years, so it's hard to be very interesting when much of your stuff is not happening. Now, they do have a congressional race or two. Ben Chandler near Lexington, John Yarmouth near Louisville that are somewhat of swing districts. I think they'll be fine, but that's probably the most interesting thing in that state. After that, I had Maryland. Now, that's a state where I think we're going to like the outcomes better because we're Democrats, but it's not like the outcomes are much in question, so I can't call them exciting. Catherine, what's next for you?
Well, I didn't have Kentucky on my list for some reason. Kentucky and South Carolina. I don't know. South Carolina doesn't excite me very much.
You never know when Alvin Green will turn up.
maybe he'll be a commentator. Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, yeah. Boy. That was...
Tim, what you got next?
Okay, my next two would be Arkansas and West Virginia. Those are both just kind of stand-pat states, and the president's going to get just drilled in those two states. Those are states that they'll just put the red tag on as soon as the polls close there, and nothing going on around the state's going to change anything. So there's a bunch of states that, like Catherine mentioned, that are all in the same septic tank, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I think there's a dividing line where things, you know, are just not real interesting. I guess I had Arkansas next. Arkansas has a congressional race or two that might be interesting. I kind of want to see in some cases, do they get a little more blue? Because it sounds like, you know, we had the gentleman a while back from Naturally Blue come on.
that sound like they have some good ideas and a good plan. Do they make some incremental change, maybe help the president do a point or two better? I mean, I have no belief that he could win the state, but can it get better? So that was my next one. Catherine, what's up for you?
I guess we're up to, like, Texas. Yeah, Texas. I've never been very interested in Texas, except when Ann Richards was there, and then I was interested. But I pretty much think of it as that place I've never been and never want to go.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of good Democrats we talked to from Texas, good folks that reside there. So, I mean, yeah, I would hate to offend those folks. And I had them a little higher, and part of that comes down to what happens Tuesday, because if it could go one way, and I don't think they'd be as interesting the other, but we'll get to that later. Tim, what you got next?
Do I want to give you one state or two this time?
Give me two. That's fine.
Okay, well, my next two are Maryland and South Carolina. South Carolina, I'm interested in seeing if the president stays within 10 points up there like he did 4 years ago. You know, they couldn't close the polls, and when they closed the polls, rather, in that state, they didn't give the state immediately to John McCain. It took quite a while that night. So I just want to see about African-American turnout and how that might affect some local races up there. And Maryland, Catherine, you might remember when David Wissing was on with us a few weeks ago. He told us that the Democrats, because of redistricting, are probably going to pick up a congressional seat up there. We are actually going to have a turnover to the positive for the Democrats in a congressional seat.
Yay!
So I think even though, you know, the president will immediately win that state on election night by a huge majority, that's a congressional seat that we want to watch if the Democrats have any hope at all of overturning the House. So that's why I had Maryland as high as I did.
I had Louisiana in this slot, and the reason I had Louisiana a little higher is because I don't think – I mean, I'm almost positive there's going to be no real action on races or turnovers or anything like that. But I do feel that you need – one of those you kind of study over time with Katrina. How much better does it get cycle by cycle? How do they – when do they get back to, say, 96, 2000, when Mary Landrieu could run off elections – and President Clinton, you know, had it a real tight state. Does it ever get back there, or has it just become another state, like many of other southern states that aren't close? Catherine, what's next for you?
Well, I guess we're getting up into the more interesting ones. I guess I'd have to say Georgia's probably next for me. You know, I'm always interested in my home state, though I think it's going to be pretty early when we find out, you know, what's going on. And there's not going to be any big surprises, I don't think. The only race that I'm really going to be watching is the Doug Stoner Senate race. But, I mean, it's still my home state, so I'll be checking in.
Yeah, I had Georgia next, too. And I think the one thing that, other than the fact that I guess, of those states that McCain won, Georgia's in the top five maybe for states that could turn, if you will. The only thing is, though, is if it goes for the president, he's won 300-plus votes, and it's just gravy. But the John Barrow race.
The John Barrow race, too. I'm
figure and holding. It could have figure and holding this House for the Democrats. Tim, what you got next?
Well, my next state, and I think I'm a state ahead of y'all because I've been given two states, so I'll just give one this time. My next state is Texas. Because of the mangling the Republicans in control did of redistricting out there, the Democrats have actually been presented with a couple of pickup opportunities in congressional races out there on election night. So that's the state I'm going to be looking at to see, you know, in the big picture, how the Democrats are doing. If they have a couple of pickups in that Republican state, that's going to bode well for us on election night. And, yes, Mitt Romney is going to win Texas handily, regardless of what the polls are saying.
Yeah, I tell you what, Catherine, I'll each give two states next, and then we'll go one by one after that. And additionally, I'm going to put mine up on Facebook on our Cuds Who Find Facebook page. If y'all want to then reply and post y'all's, we can then have a list folks can look at if they've gotten lost in all our talk, which I could see how that could happen. But my next state would be Texas, too. And I'm sorry, I looked at my list wrong. West Virginia. I would have West Virginia next. And the reason I think it is interesting is because of Joe Manchin. He's a Democrat that has just run as much away from the Democratic Party as anybody had this cycle. And my question is, how well will he do? Does this strategy work? Or do all these people that have, you know, all this negative ill will has been created towards the Democratic Party, they say, hey, I just want a real Republican. And if this guy has a little bit closer election, it may be that he would be better off defending his party level that he's going to run under instead of, you know, helping to really trash it in a way, if you will. Because this strategy was, you know, so prevalent throughout the South, you know, running against the National Party. But in the past few cycles, it's kind of ended. I guess we've just run off all the people that really don't believe in it. But this is one of the few guys to do this strategy in a while. And I want to see if it works or not. I don't know if it will. So that's why I put West Virginia there. Catherine?
Are we at the top three now?
Not yet.
I think
yet.
We're still on top five. We're not yet. So, Catherine, are you two
okay.
Or top three?
I must have missed one.
I think you didn't put Kentucky and another state in, so that kind of changed things up. So I may be behind everybody, so I'll go again. I had Texas next, and the reason I have Texas high is because if Ted Cruz wins this thing as this major Tea Party candidate, I do think that the Senate race, possibly some of the congressional races, and maybe even the presidential race could become tighter than people expect, and we may begin to have another plot point in which we see Texas turning into a Democratic state. And when Texas does turn into a Democratic state, and people like Rue Teixeira that wrote Emerging Democratic Majority, when he says when that happens, that's pretty much the death of the Republican Party as a national party, if you will, unless something else drastic changes. And I'm just kind of interested in seeing that progression, if you will. Tim, what you got next?
All right, now I am now going into my top five. At
okay.
Number five, I've got Georgia. I think the Barrow race is a race that bears a lot of watching from around the country. That's one of those places where the Democrats have to figure out a way to hold. And also, the president only lost Georgia by 5 points, you know, in down here in the Deep South. So let's just see what happens on election night here.
Yeah, and Texas was my fifth one, so I'm into my top five. Catherine, do you have three left or four left? Which guy?
I have three left.
Three left. So let's, Tim and
I.
Four.
Four left. I have four.
Four. Oh, well, now we're all together. Very good. Well, Catherine,
okay.
Go ahead. What's your fourth one?
I'm going to, you know, I'm kind of, the top four are all kind of tied for me, but I'm going to go with North Carolina. I mean, I'm sort of going to be evenly watching these last top four. I think they're all really important, but I guess North Carolina is, of the four, the least important.
Yeah, and I don't think you can go wrong with any of these four. I had his fourth one, Florida. It's going to be as tight as can be on the presidential race. It's where the Republican convention's being held. A lot of this voter ID thing Tim talks about is going to be in play, too. I do think the U.S. Senate race is not going to be as close as some of the others, so I guess that might be where I kind of break it down a little bit, because I do think that the incumbent is favored there pretty handily. Tim, what's your fourth one?
My number four is Missouri. We're watching Claire McCaskill's race there. That's just a must-hold for the Democrats, and she is in trouble. And I think we're going to be watching that late into the night.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, and that might be good news if we're watching it late into the night, because if it's decided early, it may be her going down. Catherine, number three for you.
It was Missouri. Same as, I mean, yeah, so Missouri. For the same reasons, you know, I do think it's going to be a nail biter, and I like you said, I hope we stay up late watching it.
Yeah.
It is
I
a little.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, you.
Well, they're an hour earlier than they're an hour later than us, so there will be some. All the rest of these states are all in the Eastern time zone, so.
Yeah, that'll figure in. Well, my next one was Virginia, number three, and the reason I have Virginia there is because I think both President Obama and Tim Kaine are going to break away. Right at the end of the election cycle here, and it won't be as close. It won't be the nail biter that some of these other races will be. So that's why I put them at that point. Tim, third for you?
North Carolina. It was so close. 14,000 votes separated the two presidential candidates on election night. Let's see if the polls are right in showing that maybe Romney may win that state by 2 or 3 points. Again, I think that one's going to go kind of late into the night before they call it.
Yep, well, we're into overtime, if you will, and recorded. I'll do, Catherine, do your final ones. I'll do my final ones. Let him.
My final ones are Virginia at the top and then Florida.
Okay.
I think we're going to be up late watching Virginia. I understand what you're saying, but I still think it's going to be, you know, late watching those precincts come in, especially in northern Virginia.
Yeah, and my top two states, next to the top, I have Missouri. I do think Missouri was such a bellwether state in the past. I think it'll tighten up because I think nationally it's not going to be that as tight as people think. And I think that'll make Missouri tight, so it'll be very interesting. And I think if that happens, that's probably McCaskill's best hope. I mean, I don't think she's going to run that much differently for president. If he comes up and makes it close, it's going to help her. She may even run a little bit behind him, so she better hope he wins, because that might, if he wins by two, she might sneak it out by 0.2 of a point, if you will, because polls are showing her in trouble. And that would leave my top state is North Carolina. And I think the convention being there and some of the problems, frankly, that have happened at the convention are kind of interesting to watch. And because it became this emerging blue state and now maybe regressing back, but now there's polls saying that the governor's race has gotten a lot closer. It's so fluid. So at this moment in time, I find it, you know, the most interesting state in the South. Tim, your final two.
Well, my top two are number two, Florida, and number one, Virginia. Not only does Virginia have what I think is the best Senate race in the country, but Mitt Romney absolutely has to win both Virginia and Florida in order to be elected president. There's no way around that. That's why I have those two where they are.
Yep, well, we got that thing in. Probably should have started it 3 minutes ago, but it'll be on the podcast for sure, where the thousands now get us instead of the hundreds, instead of live. So this has been the Kudzu Vine for the last Sunday in July.
Good night, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good evening.
Don't forget to vote.